If you pay any attention to political news, you know that the chatter about the likely candidates for the 2016 race for the White House started quite a while ago, probably about 10 minutes after Barack Obama's re-election became clear. But there's a lot of time and a lot of politics between now and then. After all, this is an even-numbered year. We do have elections this year with both governors and many other important positions up for votes. So it will be a busy year for our guest this hour, Kathy Allen. He is the founder and owner of the Connections Group based in Seattle. She's a veteran of many a political campaign, often on behalf of women, usually from the Democratic Party. She'll be in Medford later this week for a speaking event and a campaign school for Democrats, and joins us once again on the Jefferson Exchange. Kathy Allen, welcome back.
Thanks. Good to be here.
Good to have you. You also appear, we understand, occasionally on King TV in Seattle, the NBC affiliate, and are a former New York Times reporter. Can we guess that in your day as a journalist you covered political campaigns?
I would say that's a good bet.
All right. So, you started 2 decades ago doing this. Why decide to make the transition from covering news to, in essence, making news?
Well, actually, I was extorted into it. What happened, I was in a room full of people, and this guy said to me, well, Kathy, clearly the person who needs to be thinking about being a campaign manager is you. And I'm like in front of all of these people, and I'm like, you know, I'm here covering this story. Cut it out. And what happened, of course, is he extorts me into running his race. And that was 492 campaigns ago, and he was not only the mayor of Anchorage at the time, but he went on to become the governor of Alaska. And so from there, it's been strictly campaigns, one after the other, and I love every minute of it.
Well, I was going to say, who's keeping track? You are, obviously, 492. But even though it sounds like a very long string of things, it sounds like the love hasn't gone out of it for you.
Nah, I love it. I love it. And actually, in the last 4 and 5 years, I've had an opportunity to actually train people all over the world. I actually go to lots of different places. I've worked in like 40 different countries. And frankly, what happens when you go to places like, Yemen, I'm headed there. Last year, I spent a fair amount of time in Nepal, is that you really do learn more about politics in your own country. You learn what works. This is such a iffy business in terms of trying to figure out, is this truth? Is this what we should be doing? How can what I learn here in Seattle, in Nepal, in Colombia, help me in Medford? How does that happen? And actually what you end up learning is the truth about what moves people and what doesn't.
How difficult is it, in the case of your overseas work, to get to know and operate in another country's political system?
You would think it's harder than it is. Frankly, what happens is, in the rule of politics, everything comes from one basic rule. I have called this my golden rule of all politics, and that is you need the right message. It has to go to the right people, usually less than a third of the whole population. You got to get it to them a number of times, 5 to 7 times, in a variety of ways at the most efficient cost. And if you just operated with that one premise alone, you would find that it is the core of campaigns everywhere. I'm not so sure it's not a good blueprint for running your life.
So the point is to know what you're about and be able to communicate that to other people.
Actually, to know what it is you stand for and to be able to identify it with a community's needs and to inspire people to do something about it.
It doesn't sound like it should be that hard, and yet how many candidates do you join up with who, when you say, okay, what do you stand for, they say, or similar words?
What they say usually is, Kathy, I thought you liked me. Why on earth do you want me to run for office? The fact is that it's harder to get people, good people, to run. Within the last 10 years, I would say there's an increase in the number of kind of nice people with money that decide they want to run for office, as opposed to that person who from the heart is passionate about making change in their own backyard. So the hardest thing is really getting the right people to decide that this isn't a dirty business, or this is something that they would find very appealing and could do something major about.
So do we understand then that you recruit people as well as assist them once they are already decided to run?
Jeffrey, while I was waiting for you, I was trying to talk your ever enthusiastic and bright producer into showing up at this wonderful campaign training on Saturday, because I think Charlotte would be a fabulous candidate for office. Yes, I do spend a fair amount of time looking at who should be in office and then recruiting them myself. And I got to tell you, you have to let Charlotte attend this weekend, because I think you should at least see firsthand how important it is for great people, particularly women, to decide to run for office.
You're making her blush.
Charlotte's blushing? Well, that's another thing I'm going to have to deal with. Okay.
So, I mean, let's talk about the process of approach then. I mean, you're basically looking for people who look and sound good, who express an idea pretty well. Is that the beginning point?
Au contraire. It used to be that way.
Mm-hmm.
Now what I'm looking for are people who are smart, who are with it when it comes to their country, country and their community. I'm also looking for people who are genuine. You know how you talk to someone and you can immediately say, ooh, I don't think this person is real at all. I think this person's saying anything that comes into their head. What I do is look for people who can genuinely move people. In fact, what's been very helpful in working in, like, say, Arabic countries is to not understand the language, but know immediately in a room who is the leader in this room. Who is the person everyone's listening to? And that's what I'm looking for.
All right. Much more to talk about with Kathy Allen, who's a political campaign consultant. She recruits candidates, generally women, generally Democrats. She'll be in Medford for a couple of events this coming weekend. And here's our chance to talk to her about political campaigns and what goes into them. Join us on the Jefferson Exchange, back with Kathy Allen and you when we come back in a minute five. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on Jefferson Public Radio's News and Information Service, I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking today about politics and what it's like on the inside a campaign. Kathy Allen has lots of experience there. She's the founder and owner of the Connections Group based in Seattle, the veteran of many a political campaign, usually Democrats, usually women, in Medford for a couple of events this weekend, joining us by phone in advance of those events to just get a general idea of what it's like inside campaigns. You can join this discussion on the Exchange. Our phone number is 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. Kathy had mentioned that you helped get a mayor elected in Anchorage. You went on to become governor of Alaska. Who was that?
That was Tony Knowles.
Mm-hmm.
And actually, since then, I have done a number of different campaigns in Alaska, have done a couple of gubernatorial campaigns, and actually, I have to say that I think I've only not worked in about 8 different states. I love Oregon. Obviously, this is a fabulous time to be looking at politics. You folks have a big race coming up in terms of the Senate race. You got a bunch of others. In fact, I just saw that the Cook Report just acknowledge that Jeff Merkley was actually somebody who was on the likely to sure thing demo must win, and looks like he was looking pretty good by their accounts.
All right. And it's Jeff Merkley obviously running for re-election for the first time.
Right.
So for his second term in the Senate, should he get that. And he, of course, knocked out an incumbent himself in Gordon Smith 6 years ago. Interesting stuff that goes on, obviously, here. I want to talk about, again, the beginning. You talked about somebody who said you were the one who should be running campaigns. When you first got into it, how big an eye-opener was it? I mean, as much as you'd covered political campaigns, I can't imagine there were that many surprises.
Oh, there were lots of surprises.
Really?
In fact, there's 3 different levels of surprise. One is covering it as a reporter, where you're basically looking to see if you can develop a rapport with all sides and see if you can find the truth yourself so that you can help voters take a look at exactly what's going on. And then there is deciding to be a candidate yourself, and things couldn't be more different in terms of when your ego is in the middle or you're taking a look at, for women, taking everything that happens in politics potentially personally. What happens is that you tend to think if somebody doesn't want to vote for you that they don't like you, when actually it could be that their husband is working for, your opponent. Many of these things are such that you really do get to see a different side of it. And then as a political strategist, what happens is then you're standing back, taking a look at down on the balcony to find out, whoa, what is happening on that dance floor? What is it? Why is it that if people in one place tend to be passionate about this issue, that people over here are just bored to death with it? So it's like a matter of trying to figure out everything based upon that great philosophic line from Camelot. I wonder what the people are thinking tonight. And if you can kind of put yourself in that space of trying to figure out what people are thinking about, then the idea becomes, okay, how do I try to talk about the issues important to them? For example, today if I were to be here in Seattle talking about how important it is to increase the minimum wage to $15 a person and that is exactly what Martin Luther King would have wanted done, people would be throwing things at me because the only thing we're talking about today in Seattle is the Super Bowl and the Seahawks.
True that. It's a blue day, Blue Monday in Seattle.
Blue Monday. Mm-hmm. So it's a matter of knowing your timing, knowing how to approach a problem, and then knowing how to take a look at what's happening. You know, this campaign work has become far more technical than it ever has before. What used to be just my simple five thoughts about a golden rule, get the right message, get it to the right people, get it to them many times in a variety of ways in the most efficient manner, has now become, so what is social media going to say about this? And where am I going to be able to get the money to be able to raise as much as my opponent? There have become, I would say, there's over 30 different kinds of professional needs now in almost every campaign. It's become something that is a profession as opposed to just a passion.
Is it more expensive then?
Of course. Every year it becomes more expensive, and it's because it becomes more professionalized. Right now, most people talk about technology as having a substantial effect on politics when the technology they think about is Facebook and social media, when actually the revolution in this business has to do with managing databases and understanding how to reach the right voters as cheaply as possible. What we know about the demographics of the people that we want to actually solicit as our voters is changing every day.
So who are the hardest people to reach now then? Because, you know, given this proliferation of media sources, obviously you're going to have to work across more kinds of media than you used to. It used to be easy. You'd buy some radio, you'd buy some TV, buy some newspaper ads. And that mix has changed greatly since the Internet came to such prominence. So where do you have to go to find voters?
Usually what you start off with is those who are the best voters anyways. And people from Oregon and Washington are particularly different because everybody votes by mail. So you end up having an elongated time when people are deciding and you have to kind of like focus. You can't just focus on Tuesday, the day that one is supposed to be voting, like November 4th this year. What you have to do is you have to start thinking, okay, when are they going to vote? There are people probably like you and me that when we get our ballots, we probably know who we're going to vote for. We're not going to spend a lot of time trying to like debate who we're voting for. We kind of know. Then what happens is that we take a specific amount of time. Some people don't vote until the very end, mostly reporters, because they want all of the material that we're sending to get to them, and they want to be able to be gauging the campaign until the very last minute when people actually vote. However, I got to say that it has become much more specific in terms of those people that are the last to vote. They are usually in big turnout years, and this is sort of a medium to good-sized year, that what happens is you find it's going to be younger people who vote last. It is going to be a lot of older women, single, lower income. They are among the last to vote. There are also an awful lot of people. Those are the last to vote, by the way, are usually people who have not yet decided, or frankly, whose time is such that they just don't get to it until you're screaming at them that the deadline is approaching and they've got to get that ballot in the mail.
Let us take a call. We have Steve and Eugene on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking to Kathy Allen at the Connections Group about politics and political campaigns.
Howdy. In America, the golden rule of politics seems to be whoever has the gold makes the rules. And we just dump millions of dollars into these political campaigns trying to sway people. And your campaigns in other countries, is the monetary aspect as prevalent as it is here in the United States?
Oh, thanks for that, Steve.
Heck no. Steve, thanks for asking. It's the fact is, no. In almost every other country, what you will find is that there's much more regulation of money in and money out. In fact, in many places where I work, people actually say, no, I can't ask for money because people will think I'm trying to bribe them. Usually, in most other countries, what you have to watch out for is people buying votes. That is the more prevalent thing, is that in other countries, you'll find that people actually offer money for votes, which is illegal in every country and which is cleaning up throughout the world. But no, I can say that it is true that American politics is known worldwide as the place where money leads mission. And I don't think that, I think that there are many different cases where that isn't the case. Usually most local elections, even most state legislative races, even in many cases statewide races, money is not the predominant factor in determining who wins. However, the further up the food chain you get towards a president, yes, that is, the money does lead.
Kathy Allen, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. She is the founder and owner of the Connections Group based in Seattle and the veteran of many a political campaign, generally women, generally Democrats. You can join us on the Exchange as we talk about the political process at 800-838-3760, anywhere you can hear us. Our Rogue Valley local number, 541-552-6782. Our email address, jx@jeffnet.org. In those countries, then, where there are such steep restrictions or such strict regulations on money in, money out, is the playing field a little more level, do you find? I mean, can you talk a little more about the, can you have your candidate devoted more to talking about and understanding issues rather than being on the phone trying to get a few more bucks?
Oh, contraire. No. What happens in most of these other countries is, of course, they are parliamentary forms of government. And every political system I have found, Jeffrey, is that, you know, there's good points and there's bad points. Certainly in America, we're talking about, we still have protections like free and fair elections, except that you don't have to worry about free and fair elections if you've got, $1 million to spend. You may wonder if that's free and fair. However, in most areas of the world, what happens is that the parties become more predominant. And what happens when you are running for office is that most people are talking about a party platform, very similar to our friends in Canada, just north of us. What happens is that the parties become the ones that hold the message, and you actually end up replicating what the major party message and platform is, as opposed to becoming somebody that speaks about your own message. So it's in my world, I look at that and say, all right, I get it. That's got some good points and some bad points. But when it comes to, do we get a better government out of it? Not sure.
In those parliamentary systems, then, I've often wondered about what motivates the voters, though, because, for example, the prime minister is going to be the leader of the party that gets the most votes, and the most votes come through the individual candidates. So when people go to the polls, are they thinking about, yeah, I really want the Conservatives in power, I want Labor in power? Or are they thinking more about the individual candidate?
They're definitely thinking about the party. Mm-hmm. That's what happens in almost all cases. And the head of the party, it would be like, you know, if we're running here locally in the Rogue Valley, what would happen is that we would sit back and we would say, well, let's see, do I like Obama or do I like Chris Christie? What do I think of? Mostly what happens is that the individual politics of the person running is subordinate to what that party power is. And so in many cases, and by the way, that's not the opposite here, you know, over a third to, I would say, a half of the voters end up voting because they see themselves as one political party or their parents were in one political party, and that is passed on from generation to generation in a lot of cases.
More questions here for Kathy Allen at the Connections Group. Here's Ralph in Mendocino. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, good morning, and an excellent topic and guest. I try to support an organization called Project Vote Smart, and their goal is to inform the electorate as to the positions taken by elected representatives. To their chagrin, they've found that they cannot get a response from more than, well, on my count, it's 13%. Their count is something on the order of 25%. So they've had to fabricate positions for these people because they don't want to disclose where they stand on issues because all they want to do is be returned to the public trough. And I regard that as deplorable. Having watched an extended version of Mark Twain's life. It's a new Gilded Age, isn't it, where money counts for everything and principles nothing. It's just deplorable, and I'll take any kind of comment you have on the air.
All right. Thank you, Ralph.
Well, Ralph, I can't defend all of the golden gooses out there, but what I can say is that the closer elections are to your own backyard, the less important the money becomes. That we are still seeing a situation, and I'm anxious to see what this political year looks like, because we are seeing a new electorate who is just fed up with all the noise. To your point in terms of some of the very creative kinds of new online services that are offering information about all the candidates, the problem with people reacting to them is that two things. One is you get so many of them. I think that a number of our candidates got over a dozen different entities that sent out questionnaires of 4 to 40 questions saying, what do you think about these? We're going to offer them online so that people can see the rest of the story. What happens is that you get a lot of these, and you take a look at the fact that people still and yet don't necessarily take the time to go online and research their candidates nearly as much as even they used to. What I would say is that more people are finding it more interesting to actually start talking about politics. One of the things that I have found recently is that there has been a revolution amongst young people getting involved, and there's no better place to see that than in Oregon and Washington. In both of these places, we have started to see a real resurgence of young people getting involved, not only from a potential of getting involved in just being part of a political campaign, but also in running themselves. We've had an opportunity here in Washington State this last year to help elect people from 23 to 33, and seeing the amazing change it makes in other young people deciding to vote and run for office themselves.
So if they see a few of their cohort joining the club, they'll think, hey, this is an okay club to be a member of.
Yes, and also what they're seeing is that, geez, at least I can do no worse than half of these guys. There is a sense that these young people who are not motivated by how much money they can actually attract for their campaigns, but to actually tell it like it is and be very forthcoming, where, you know, people feel like they can tell the truth about what's really going on. And most of the voters, particularly older women, tend to find them enormously refreshing and worth giving a try.
Back to Ralph's issue about people not returning questionnaires to Project Vote Smart et al. And Project Vote Smart's been around long enough that it was one of the first places I turned to as a reporter years ago. So have you counseled candidates not to deliver information back to places like Project Vote Smart?
Never. No. I think that the more information out there, the better. And frankly, I've helped a lot of them decide to put some time aside just to fill it out. In fact, I've said to a couple of folks, look here, you have 3 meetings this afternoon. You only have to go to one of them if you will just fill out the rest of your questionnaires. The fact is, you do get into a situation where you get so much information that in many of these cases that people just literally start just cutting and pasting what they sent somebody else, when I like to advocate that you stop and actually start thinking about what's going on and put some of yourself in these. It just takes some time. And campaigns, like everything else in everyone else's lives, we get to a point where it's hard to find the time. Being very careful about taking a look at what's happening, you know, obviously the inclusion of the internet and our iPhones and everything else has meant the average person has added 9 hours a week just to answering their cell phone and or emails that we didn't have before. It's just hard to do all the things you want to do as a good candidate.
Let's take another call. Here's Mark in Reading. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Kathy Allen.
Good morning. My question is, do you involve yourself in initiative and or referendum campaigns?
Yes, I do. I have, in fact, was just looking at the reports and getting ready for this marvelous show. I was looking to see, where is that little rascal marijuana initiative happening now down there in Oregon? And what else is happening in terms of Merkley's campaign? And then what's happening in terms of some of these others? Actually, I have been intrigued at the number of initiatives that are starting to come along that interest me. Obviously, up here we had the $15 minimum wage initiative that no one would have thought would have been popular, But it passed.
In the city of SeaTac, right?
In the city of SeaTac, yes. And even though it didn't pass by a lot, it certainly has become the precursor for one that's about to happen here in Seattle, and I think a good part of Washington State. So, yes, I do, and I think that these initiatives are definitely worth looking at, because some of them are populist, some of them are just paid for by those golden goose you talk about.
All right. Thanks for the call, Mark. Appreciate it. We'll take more calls as we resume our conversation with Kathy Allen about politics. She is a political consultant, the veteran of many political campaigns, generally women, generally Democrats, in Medford for a couple of events this weekend to help bring in some more candidates. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange on the other side of a break. Back with Kathy Allen and your phone calls and emails in a minute 20. Final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We're talking about politics, more specifically women in politics, campaigns by women in politics, usually Democrats. This is the work in which Kathy Allen specializes. She's the founder and owner of the Connections Group based in Seattle, but a veteran of many, many political campaigns. 492, she gave us the count at the beginning of the program. And you can join us as we talk about the processes that go on inside political campaigns, how they're run, and about the changes taking place over the years with money and technology and so forth. Phone numbers here at the Exchange, 800-838-3760, anywhere in our listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Kathy, we were just talking about initiatives and how you do get involved in those campaigns. How much will a batch of initiative measures on the ballot set the tone in a political year? I mean, how much will that help decide who runs, how they run? I mean, for example, you looked at when George W. Bush is running for re-election in 2004, and Karl Rove engineered all of those ballot measures in all those states to ban same-sex marriage, which brought a lot of voters out, 4 million voters that usually didn't vote to vote for George W. Bush.
It's true. However, I got to say that when it comes to what really affects our lives, what we did see here in Washington State was the doubleheader where we had obviously marijuana legalization at the same time we had gay marriage approval. And from that perspective, each of the people that was drawn to vote for either one of those was also a likely voter for the other. So yes, there was some manipulation, I think, of initiatives to be able to change the actual turnout of the election that could help you as well. However, much of this high-level kinds of intrigue and strategy is not the commonplace. What happens in a lot of these cases, it's still a matter of money. Obviously, we had the GMO, which is obviously any kind of genetic modeling or any kind of measure that really talked about what kind of disclosure you were going to have in regards to the ingredients of those products you buy. That was up here, and even though it became a good debate that would actually manipulate who would come out to vote, what happened in the long run is that the money coming in to talk about the evils of the GMO by the actual drug companies predominantly became the issue that I think swayed that election. So money does have a serious place. However, when you get down to those kind of elections that are local, hardly at all. Yes, if you have a lot of people coming out for gun control or anti-gun control, that will change the dynamics of a campaign. However, if it has to do with genetic modeling, I don't think so. When it comes to even marijuana, I don't think so. I don't think it's enough to really change who's going to get elected down in Ashford, in Ashland or in Medford. So in all of it, I'd be more inclined to say right now what people are looking for are new candidates that tell the truth, that are genuine, and what they think about issues. What I think Ralph was talking about, as he mentioned, you know, people who refuse to say anything, or when you ask them a question, they get back to their message and they don't answer the question. People have now become enormously, enormously frustrated with how little information they get. One of the things we're actually doing at the campaign training this Saturday in Medford is we're now advising people, answer the stupid question, will you please? Don't try to be coy. The public is getting much more sophisticated. Answer the question. Tell them what you are going to do. Tell them what's different about your approach. Be honest as if you were sitting with them around a coffee table, because the public is now just getting a whole lot more sophisticated and is refusing to vote for candidates that just aren't speaking up.
We can take more calls for Kathy Allen at the Connections Group about political campaigns, how they're run, what they look like on the inside. Join us at 800-838-3760, anywhere in the listening area. In the Rogue Valley, 541-552-6782, by email jx@jeffnet.org. Eli in Medford, welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Hi, I was glad to hear you acknowledge that it was money that swayed the campaign against labeling GMOs, but you got it backwards, perhaps inadvertently. All the money that poured in was not talking about the evils of GMOs. The money that poured in was saying GMOs were fine, we don't need to label them. That's where the money was.
Yes, that's correct. That is correct. Yep.
And the other thing is your comment about we have free and fair elections here, and a big underreported story is how hackable and manipulatable, if that's a word, the computerized voting machines are. Now, the guy who, you know, created these programs went to Congress and testified and showed how easy it is, and there's been case after case of showing that this has happened. People should go to blackboxvoting.com, and it might be blackboxvoting.org, actually.
I'll see what I can find here.
Yeah, and find out about this, because it is happening. And also just the press, the media. For instance, it turned out that Ron Paul won the state of Maine, but the media reported that he didn't. And then, you know, when it turned out that he did, it was like it was old news, it was past. And they had a huge, the media misreporting had a huge impact.
You're talking about a primary, though, right?
Yes.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah, on his campaign in general, of just underreporting, not letting him have a platform and that kind of stuff. So I would contest that we have free and fair elections here.
All right. Thanks for that, Eli. And by the way, I just looked up. There is both blackboxvoting.com and blackboxvoting.org. They're not the same site.
Yes, they're not. And actually, one of them is a foe of the other. However, what I would say to Eli is get over it. I got to tell you that I have been among the most conspiratorial-minded person. Actually, I grew up as a knee-jerk liberal Democrat. Of course, I'm always looking at things and assuming that we are being violated with our privacy and everything else. But the black box guys are over the top. And with all due respect, I got to tell you, I believe that our election system, those fabulous people who put on elections year after year, who could care less about parties and just really want to do their job, have impressed me as a, I would say, as a former paranoid everything. I have been won over by the actual people who work in elections that do not do this. Yes, in Florida there were problems. Yes, there are always going to be some areas where there's problems. But I think the black box epidemic is a Rand Paul kind of conspiracy myself, and think that our elections are a whole lot cleaner than anyone thinks. And the hacking into them, you know, I worry about being targeted by being hacked in at Target. I don't worry about being hacked in by my elections people.
Why not?
Because I look at this and I think that the safeguards put in place, which, by the way, requires like a two-hour kind of tour of the elections office in any of our places. And by the way, Oregon and Washington are among the best in the country in terms of the kinds of elections and the kind of safeguards they've put into play. Got to tell you that I am a believer that these elections of ours are a whole lot less likely to be hacked into than Target or Walmart.
All right, let's take another call from Blue in Grants Pass. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange. We're talking elections with Kathy Allen.
Yes, hi. I just wanted to say that with all the money that goes into presidential elections, and I'm talking about George Bush Jr. spending over $100 million for president. How is it possible for the average person to even become president? Someone like Dennis Kucinich or Ron Paul were just cast to the side, and I'll take my question off the air.
Thank you, Blue.
I got to tell you that, Barack Obama, I have to say that, when he started out, he was hardly what I would call a millionaire. And I know that personally because I was working for Hillary Clinton's campaign. And I can tell you that he was pretty much someone that no one thought was going to be able to win anything. And the fact is, he built a very grassroots campaign. He was among the first to see the power of the Internet, which is basically free campaigning. And he also knew an awful lot about being able to network a message and an inspiration. I've got to say that, politics require patience, and they also require being schooled in the politics of campaigning. One of the reasons I'm coming down to Medford is because there are a bunch of folks who are, I'm not so sure where, I just check in here. I think we're almost sold out, but there are a few more spaces still left open, if you'll permit me a little PR here. Let me just say that this Saturday we are going to do a campaign training on all of these things that now become part of our campaign budgets, our getting the word out, talking to people about how you secure enough votes to win, building a team who makes a good candidate. All these things require people getting involved and learning how to do it. You can't just stand up, give a speech, and think you're going to be president of the United States. It doesn't work that way. You have to work at it, which is one of the reasons why you have to learn how to be a good candidate. You have to know who to talk to, how to be able to inspire people. At the same time, you got to raise money. You got to know how to get that brochure out the right time. Got to know how to appeal to young people. That is one of the most important things, particularly now in Oregon. You've got to know how to inspire people from 18 to 35 to get involved. And so that's what we're doing this Saturday in regards to at Medford. We're going to be there doing a campaign school this Saturday from 8:30 to 4 over at the North Central Woolworth Building in Medford. So if you're interested, you can get involved by calling the Democratic Party headquarters at 541-858-1050. And like I said, I think we've only got a couple more spaces left. It's only $30. And if you came to this training, you wouldn't have to hire a high-spread political consultant like myself. You could just listen to what we could do, and you could do the campaign all by yourself.
Let's take another call. We've got about 4 minutes left with Kathy Allen. Here's Boyd in Ashland. Welcome to The Exchange.
Good morning. Is that me?
That's you.
Okay. I can hear you clearly. I'm curious if your professional there will tell us something about NLP, neuro-linguistic programming. How effective is it? Some people say it is the reason that Barack Obama became president.
Neuro-linguistic programming. Okay. Have you heard that one before, Kathy?
Nope, I haven't. I can say, yes, I've heard it before, but no, I don't think so. I think the most important, compelling thing about his campaign was his ability truly to inspire young people to get involved. No doubt about it, that he was a message of a right time that just told people, okay, you too can have an impact, and he was right.
Let's go to Julie in Ashland. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Kathy Allen.
Hello, thank you. I was wondering, I came from California. Every time I went to vote in person, they checked my signature for my whole life, and then all of a sudden that changed, and there was no checking of signatures. And I was just going to bring up another way that possibly votes could be stuffed into the ballot box is because there is a high percentage of people not voting. All those names could be voted for without the person even knowing, and especially if there's no signature or no in-person identification needed. And I don't think that the people are trained, the people who, I don't know what you call them, but the ones who are there when you vote and they take your ballot from you. I don't know if anyone's trained anymore. I asked them, why aren't you taking signatures? And they said, well, we aren't supposed to. So lots of factors. what I'd like to know if you've ever thought of.
All right. Well, that's news to me, the non-checking signatures. Kathy, what do you know?
They do check signatures. And actually what happens is that particularly you in Oregon, when the ballot comes in, you sign the outside envelope, and there are qualified people who do take a look at that signature, and they match it against the signature that you gave when you first registered. So, yes, there is a check and balance on that.
I've watched the process. The barcode on the outside brings up your signature.
That's
and they
correct.
Check it against that. And it's a,
yep,
visual check, and the ones that are in doubt get shunted aside. I want to come back to a major point that you've said a couple times now about candidates who can tell the truth and about finding the truth in a campaign. I mean, but you still have to appeal to large numbers of people and form a coalition. So is it possible to be completely honest, or are we talking about a difference between being completely honest and telling the truth?
Well, I think you can find a good example of that in the recent Chris Christie situation. As a good Democrat, what I can tell you is that I have been watching Chris Christie and taking a look at exactly what he's gone through. And I, on occasion, said to myself, you know, this guy is either a incredibly honest truth teller or he's a con artist. And up until the recent debacle in regards to the bridge situation, in New Jersey, all I can say is I thought he was telling the truth. And when it came through that there's an awful lot of just political manipulation going on, I was surprised. Yes, great actors can sometimes be great candidates, but in most of the cases, people will find out, particularly reporters, I find them to be great associates of the public in just being able to call the bluff of someone. I think what we need is more revealing technology that allows us to hear some of those bloopers that people make, or those offhanded comments, which were actually kind of sacked Mitt Romney in his last presidential bid. I think that, yes, the search for truth is everlasting, and I think that it's a tough job to be able to find someone that can tell the truth and still be elected, but I find people every year that do.
And you're still out there on the search for them. Campaign School for Democrats on Saturday in Medford. The speech by Kathy Allen at a fundraiser Friday night, 5 to 7 in Medford. You can contact Jackson County Democrats if you want to know more. Kathy Allen, thank you so much for joining us today on The Exchange.
It's a pleasure.
Good to have you. Tomorrow on The Exchange at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about California pot farms and their effect on salmon. We'll get an update on OR7, Oregon's Wandering Wolf. And then we'll talk to the author at 9 o'clock of Say This, Not That, Effective Personal Communication. That's all tomorrow on the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Our producer is Charlotte Duren, also at the controls today. Thanks for listening. Please join us again tomorrow at 8 for another edition of the Jefferson Exchange here on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. And have a great day.